Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Movin' Right Along, a Muppet Movie podcast brought to you by ToughPigs.com. This is the podcast where we watch The Muppet Christmas Carol 2 minutes at a time and talk about it a lot. I'm your host, Ryan Rowe.
I'm your other host, Anthony Strand.
And today we have a first-time guest. We're very excited to have him here. Guest, please tell us who you are.
Hi, my name is Cam Garrity. I am a graphic designer, puppeteer, podcaster, Muppet fan, and a huge fan of this show. So I'm so excited to be on here.
Well, thank you. We're excited to have you here. And yes, you do so many things. So thanks for joining us. And you are here to talk today about minutes 81 and 82 of The Muppet Christmas Carol, in which Thankful Heart concludes and Scrooge distributes gifts. This clip begins with that shot that we saw at the very end of last week with the whole crowd of humans and Muppets running past the Statler and Waldorf haberdashery. Just a very quick glimpse of that. Cam, do you have any thoughts on that shot for any reason?
You know what? Is it actually Waldorf or is it Staldorf?
I don't know. It's kind of an old-timey typeface, right? Yeah,
there's just something about the way, if you look at the wreath, and right to the right of that wreath where you should see like the beginning of a W, it almost looked like an S to me. So I was like, maybe
the sign is obscured.
Well, I wasn't sure if it was like a weird like Walter and Staldorf.
I don't know, but I think it's worth looking into.
Okay, we'll have to do some research on that. Walter and Staldorf or Wattler and Staldorf?
Wattler and Staldorf.
Okay.
I don't know. That's the worst episode of From the Balcony on Movies.com.
Ooh, wow.
I mean, Val Strazovec is still alive, right? The production designer for this movie. No, he died a couple years ago. Oh, we can't ask him.
Unfortunately, we can't
I'm ask just going to have to IM Brian Henson right now.
Okay, do it, please.
You got to do it.
He'll be like, what are you talking about? So where is everybody going? Where is Scrooge going? And everyone is following him in this joyful game of follow the leader that they're doing. He's going to his nephew Fred's house. And there's this little sequence that all takes place while there's an instrumental section of the song. So the whole thing is done without any dialogue, which is kind of cool. It's just, you know, acting. they don't get to use words. They just have to act with their faces and their gestures.
And they pack so much into those like couple seconds. I think it's like 11 seconds by the clock. And it really has like almost an animated cartoon feel just by you could break down each second and understand a new emotion that's happening there.
Yeah. Well, I mentioned during the other scene at Fred's house, like the Christmas present scene, how much I adore Robin Weaver as Clara, as Fred's wife. I think she's just a delight. And this scene is a huge part of why. Because, like you said, Ryan, she doesn't say anything, but she just has this, like, beaming, greatly amused smile that Scrooge has come in and give them presents. And Fred looks so baffled.
He's just bewildered,
He's bewildered, and she's just overwhelmed with joy. She's so happy.
It's a miracle.
Like, looks like she's about to laugh, you know? Like,
I think she is laughing a little bit,
Yeah, for sure.
It's wonderful.
Right, and that's all in a few seconds, like you say.
Did you notice that Fred doesn't use his arms to hug Scrooge, but Clara does?
No.
Oh, that's great.
Does Fred not actually mutually return the hug?
No, Fred just gets hugged by Scrooge with, like, Scrooge's arms are around Fred's whole body. So Fred could kind of only, like, look off in the distance, like, I can't process what's going on. Meanwhile, Clara's like, I think this is the first gift we ever got from him. Like, he didn't show up to our wedding.
You know? Right.
Well, in the book, I mean, I guess I'm opening the old curiosity shop early yet again. In the book, it is explicit that this is the first time they've ever met. Like, when he goes to the party with Ghost of Christmas Present, he does not know what his niece in law looks like. He like says something about how, like, oh, that's his wife or whatever. Okay. And then here, when he does, because so in the book, Scrooge spends Christmas Day with Fred and his friends and wife. Like, he does not go to Bob Cratchit's house on Christmas Day.
That Fred was trying to get him to come to.
Exactly. So he accepts the invitation and goes. And in the book, it says, "Dear heart alive, how his niece by marriage started. Scrooge had forgotten for the moment about her sitting in the corner with the footstool." So then it says, "Why, bless my soul," cried Fred. "Who's that? It's I, your Uncle Scrooge. I have come to dinner. Will you let me in, Fred?" "Let him in. It's a mercy he didn't shake his arm off." Scrooge was at home in 5 minutes. Nothing could be heartier. His niece looked just the same. So it's, you know, it's like as she had in the you know, dream. Or
the alternate visit with the possible ghost. Version of this day that he saw, yeah.
Right. And can I read the rest of this paragraph just because I like it?
Please.
"His niece looked just the same. So did Topper when he came. So did the... So did the plump sister when she came. So did everyone when they came. Wonderful party, wonderful games, wonderful unanimity, wonderful happiness."
Wow, Topper made a comeback.
Yeah, Topper and the plump sister. Yeah. You know, we call her Clara in this movie, but Fred's sister-in-law then.
Wow. Yeah, Fred's nice. Good for Topper and the sister-in-law.
Yeah. So, it's like Scrooge is just so happy to be... Because, as I said... earlier, like in the book, he gets so into the game playing that when they insult him, he's like so startled.
Yeah.
So it's like part of Scrooge's happy ending is that he gets to just be at the party and play the games not be the butt of insults, you know, behind his back.
Yeah, that's really nice. He brought his phone. He gets to play Jackbox games with them. He has a great time.
Yep.
He's like, "Oh, I never knew that these games existed." Yeah, the exclamation of, like, wonderful games, wonderful this, that reminds me of when Strange Pork is at the party earlier, and he says, "Oh, wonderful game." I don't know if that was intentional at all on Jerry Jewell's part, but it resonates with that, for sure.
Oh, good thinking.
Thanks. So, yeah, they get presents from Uncle Scrooge. Then everyone runs back the other way past the Statler and Waldorf store, or possibly Wattler and Staldorf store.
Oh, you know what? Before we go off that, could I just mention, I noticed this one really great puppetry moment as Scrooge is walking out of their living room. Sprocket does this great little double take that's like, "Wait, why did I even come in here? Like, you didn't give them any of the presents I'm holding." And it's just, I don't know if it was Steve or you know, just another puppeteer, but there's this great like double take of Sprocket going like, "Why? I could have stayed outside in the car, staying warm," sure. You know.
Yeah, because
I would guess that Steve is playing Bean in this stuff, right? Probably.
Yeah.
Yes. Other than he's not in this shot.
He's not in that shot. Oh, and then maybe it is Steve, because I mean, you would think Sprocket like would be special to him. I don't.
You think know he would want to? Yeah.
You would think so. Yeah.
Yeah, because the giant pile of presents that Scrooge pulls these from is being carried, I think, by that Fraggle Rock monster whose name.
Yes, is Aretha, I wrote her name down
on the wiki. Yeah. Yeah, so that's true. Sprocket has no reason to come in with the other pile of presents. So that's really funny. I'll have to look for that next time.
Yeah, the police dog is there too.
Yeah, I did catch a glimpse of him. Yeah, so, and again, what purpose is he serving? Right. So they all run back the other direction, and now they arrive at what is apparently some kind of nursing home, I think. There are two whatnots with these sort of, I don't know, are these like... the hats that nurses used to wear, or they look kind of like old timey, like a maid used to wear.
Yeah, just like a Hausfrau kind of.
Yeah, but this is where Scrooge finds old Fozziwig and old Headmaster. So these guys are just two elderly guys apparently living in the same space now, and they're both still around.
Two elderly Frank Ozzes.
Yes.
There's something so fascinating to me about the idea that Muppets age in this world, which we know that they do not ordinarily, you know, even in 1992, like Kermit hadn't aged, you know, or whatever. And just the idea that Fozzie has grown old since we saw him last in this movie, and Sam the Eagle,
yeah,
like, and Sam, like, and Fozzie explicitly can't hear anything. like has an ear horn.
He does, know? Yes.
It's kind of unsettling, but I kind of love it. Like,
yeah, I don't mind it.
I know that Joe Hennis really hates it. This is yes, like his least
I had that in my notes.
Oh, is that true?
Yes. Yeah.
See, I'm more concerned by the extra hair that Fozzie has grown.
Right. They do several things to make them both look older. Sam has his eyebrows are gray. And then, yeah, Fozzie's fur is a different shade. I guess that's the shade
looks
that
like moldy
bears turn when they get old.
I was going to say, that's happening to me as I get older.
So. And then, Fozzie has this long white hair, which we've never seen that kind of hair of any color on him before. But we got to make him old. Got to make him look old.
Do you know what this scene actually reminds me of? This is neither of you would know this, but in Bismarck, North Dakota, there used to be a rock and roll McDonald's. Like, it was specifically called like McDonald's Rock and Roll Cafe.
Really?
Yes. And it was 1950s rock and roll themed. It's not there anymore. It's just a regular McDonald's now. So don't go looking for it.
Too bad.
But yeah, I know it is way too bad. I didn't know that until today when I double checked to see if it was still there. But the bathroom doors, the men's bathroom. So this place opened in the early 90s. And so the men's bathroom was a drawing of James Dean looking in the mirror, but he's like 65.
Ooh.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. And the women's bathroom was Marilyn Monroe.
Looking I knew in the it was going to be Marilyn Monroe.
But she's like 65. Right. And like, first of all, even as a kid, it just like unsettled me. And that's how I feel about Fozzie and Sam. Like, just like James Dean and Marilyn Monroe, they should not be this old, you know?
That's right.
I don't know. So for the Muppets, I think it's okay with me because this is like a self-contained storybook world.
Yeah, these are like this isn't Fozzie and Sam. This is like their relatives who they shipped in to play the older versions of Fozzie and Sam.
Or they're just in prosthetics.
What do you think? Like, this is them in makeup.
They just put an actor in a wig and draw some lines on their face. This is exactly what this is. Yeah. I don't know. Like, we've seen baby versions of the Muppets that we know as adults, and that's not disturbing, but I guess.
Yeah. Somehow. Well, and would we even say like, is it disturbing earlier in the movie that we see Waldorf and Statler, younger? Cause it's kind of the same thing, right?
Yeah. They pretty much just change their hair color. So it's not quite as weird, but it is
true. Right.
It is unusual to see them looking younger like that.
Well, I mean, it was cool that they got Sonny Bono to do it, to play Waldo.
Right.
Other than that. Anyways.
I was going to say, too.
We all have so many things to say.
Yes.
Cam, please.
I was going to say, well, two things. First of all, that I always loved the symmetry of Fozzie having the ear horn, because it reminded me as a kid of the first time we see him in the Muppet movie, and he comes in honking the horn.
Oh yeah.
Sure.
So it's like he just knows it's a bit. Like, he just knows that like horns are funny. So might as well just like commit to it as an old guy. But also in watching this 2 minutes at a time, you realize like how jarring these interactions with Scrooge must be. Cause he's like dropping into places 8 seconds at a time.
Yeah.
And I mean, these guys are pretty senile from the looks of it. So like, they barely have a chance to like clock who this guy is, let alone why he's coming here or why this is significant.
Yeah. And I was wondering, has Scrooge known that they were there this whole time? This is probably the first time he's ever visited them.
Too.
And just the fact that his old principal and his old boss happen to live in the same place now. Yeah.
And apparently are friends. Like, they're sitting next to one another.
Right. Like, yeah. They're playing checkers, actually.
It's close enough so that Frank Oz could perform both of them at the same time.
Sure. Yeah, I don't know. I guess he must have known they were there somehow, or else he was just popping into every building that he passed by on the way to give people presents, and they just happened to be there.
He's like, hey, Fozziewig is like, yeah, Ebenezer. And he's like, yes, I came to see you.
Could it be? Yeah. Yeah. And how old must the headmaster be here? Because he seemed kind of old. I mean, Sam always seems kind of old, but when Scrooge was just a kid, so he's got to be getting up there.
I think he's 93 years old because I mean, I don't know. Because, I mean, okay, that's the other 93. Thing is, like,
I'll accept that.
Well, as, I mean, as we've discussed, though, Michael Caine is 58 in this movie.
Yeah.
And so if we assume Scrooge is about 58, which seems reasonable, you know, it's not like, it's not like, so, Scrooge is, it's not like Michael Caine is made up. It's not like he's playing 80 or something, you know. So Sam, you know, could have been 40 or whatever when,
okay,
when Scrooge was,
okay,
when Scrooge was.
So he's probably in his 80s. Yeah, I'll buy that.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. There you go.
And there you have it.
You solved that one. Yeah. The other thing, I took a few notes about ear trumpets or ear horns, as they are also called. Wikipedia says that these things date back to the 17th century, and it notes that a sound trumpet does not amplify sound. It takes the sound power received over a large area and concentrates it into a smaller area. The received sound is louder, but no power has been created in the process. So that's how those things work, approximately. And yeah, you just always see them usually in period pieces, but sometimes even not in a period piece, just to denote that a character is incredibly old. And some reason, like, it's characters who use them are often saying things like, "Eh, what's that, Sonny? You gotta speak up." It's too bad we don't hear any dialogue in this scene, because I would have loved to hear Fozzie say, "What's that, Sonny?"
Yeah, that would have been good. Yeah. Have we ever? I'm trying to think. Do we? Is there? I guess he would just sound like Yoda, right?
Elderly Fozzie. Would,
yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, I guess so.
Or Grover. I mean, it'd be
somewhere in that.
Like, I'm trying to think if we've ever heard Frank Oz play an old character, and we probably have at some point.
I mean, like, but George the janitor, but
I guess George, yeah.
But that's more in his, like, Bert range than, you know, a little more gravelier than Fozzie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh.
Well, Fozzie's overbite is also more pronounced in the, when you see him from the side.
As old.
His dentures aren't in.
That's right.
Yeah. And so the other thing about this scene is that Sam takes the present and hits himself in the noggin with it many times.
Like, I think he's trying to shake it to hear what's inside.
Right, but isn't he hitting it against his head? It sure seems
notice, maybe, but I'm sure you're right.
Not. Oh, I see what you mean. Yeah.
Like, to me. I don't know. It just looks funny to me. It's always, when I was a kid, that's what I thought he was doing, at least. And I've just never corrected it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. Like, well, isn't that what you do when you get a present? You bang it against your head to try to figure out, like, okay, how heavy is
this? How you
this?
Know if it's Legos or not.
Yeah,
exactly.
Right. If it hurts a lot, it's probably a hardcover book, you know?
Yep. Yeah, that's how you know.
And so on. Or a bowling ball. Yeah, anything else on elderly?
Or a magical talking bowling ball.
Yeah.
Anyways, go on.
Deep anything cut, else deep on cut. Elderly Sam and Fozzie before we leave them behind?
I just want to know what happened to those puppets.
Yeah.
That's a discussion for another time.
These must have been... Do you think they built them from scratch to be old versions of these characters?
They look like one-offs to me.
Okay.
I think there are too many variations. I could be really wrong about this. You know, maybe it's some kind of trick of lighting... Plus, you know, some sort of makeup, but I feel like the only thing that at least Sam could be reused for is, like, I don't know, it's been a while since I've seen Treasure Island, if this is the one that they used for that, like, zombie
oh the ghost
arrow
Sam yeah
oh, like
yeah
the sea, like the seaweed arrow
But I would have to look at that again.
All right, yeah, that's an interesting thought. Well, we'll get to that's that
sure
next season
in mind,
on this
yeah.
podcast. All right, so Scrooge continues the song now as he makes his way around the town.
And he resumes singing after 40-odd seconds of silence. He resumes singing with the, in my opinion, sweatiest and most awkward lyric in this entire movie.
Do tell.
Well, with a thankful heart that is wide awake, I do make this promise every breath I take. We'll be using that as singing praise. But just there's something I do make this promise with a thankful heart that is wide awake. I do make this promise every breath I take. Yeah.
Because I will make this promise.
That's what I've always heard, but I guess.
Is it? Oh, well, either way, it's
either
like
way.
You can feel Paul Williams stretching to fit the meat.
Yes.
Like,
right.
It's just like, Because it could just be, I make this promise or I promise this, but it's like, he needs it to fit the tune that he's already established. It's just like, sure, I do make this promise, or I will make this promise. Sure, whatever. Like, good enough. Let's go to lunch, you know?
Right, next line.
And I think I've made it clear over the course of this season and previous seasons that I think Paul Williams is a genius.
Yes.
Oh, of course.
But this particular line, also with a thankful heart that is wide awake. I don't know, man. Can a heart be awake?
I don't know.
I mean, it's...
Can a heart be asleep?
I don't know. I guess can a heart be thankful too? I mean, is what you'd...
Oh, yeah, right. So, I guess from the very beginning, it's personifying a vital organ. True. So it's just continuing.
So lyrics.com at least says, I do make this promise for that.
Okay.
Which is how I've always said it. So, I don't know.
I guess in my head, I've always been trying to make it less...
Yeah, me less too. Awkward.
Yeah.
Anyways,
I don't know. It just amuses me. I'm not like mad about it or anything.
Yeah, no, that's a good observation. Every breath I take will be used now to sing your praise is interesting to me, because then he says something about beg you to share my days.
Well, we need to be clear. Murray the Minstrel, Baguni, Mudwell the Mud Bunny.
Yes.
That's who he wants to share his days with. That's Scrooge's new family.
Right, right. He's being very friendly to this family who
begs them.
He's ignored. Not being friendly.
He begs them to share his days.
Yes.
He's not just asking. He's not saying, hey, if you want to. He is begging them. They're moving in.
He is. Right? He said it out loud. Everybody heard it. Happening. And there's an entire crowd there listening.
That's how this ends.
Yeah. But just the phrase, sing your praise, is interesting. Like, he's going to go around town complimenting everyone.
Yeah, which is what he's doing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. Yeah, so he's gonna. Not only is he gonna go around giving presents to people, he's gonna actively sing their praises. Like, oh, that's that hat looks great on you, Murray the Minstrel. Good job buying that hat. I don't know. So then there is the mice or the Mises or the Mouses. He boops one of them on the nose as he continues singing. And I had never noticed before, there's a little squeak sound effect on the soundtrack when he boops the mouse on the nose.
With a loving guarantee.
It is the same squeak sound effect, I went back and checked, that we hear when Piggy hugs Kermit.
I wondered about it,
movie. Is that right?
But I did not bother to go back and check, but I'm so glad you did.
I couldn't not, because I remembered you talking about like that she was goosing him in that episode. I was like, I think this is the same effect.
Huh. So so Kermit makes the same sound when he is squeezed as a mouse makes when it's poked poked in the nose. Fascinating.
Cartoon logic.
Right. And then he gives them a block of cheese that's wrapped in ribbon, which is very nice because they said earlier that
Can we talk about this moment for a second?
Yeah.
Because I have something that I need to address.
Oh, good.
So there's a little, again, some nice symmetry because when we pass by Murray, Baguni, and Mudwell, these three characters had sung in Scrooge, A Small Folk Live in Misery, and then Scrooge at the end presents them with a ton of food and gifts and grapes and all this stuff.
Oh, yeah, he's handing them like a fruit platter.
Yes, yes. And then right after that line in Scrooge, that's when we hear the mouses sing, It's Even Worse for Mouses.
Mm.
In this moment now, Scrooge gives them a small bit of cheese. There are less mice than were in the opening scene. And proportionally, like, that's a lot less food than he gave Murray and Baguni and Manuel. So I maintain it is still worse for mouses.
Yeah.
Okay. Scrooge may be redeemed, but it is still worse for mouses in Dickensian London.
Yeah.
This Christmas Day.
I guess, yeah, I can't argue with that. It would have been no, like, yeah, no effort at all for him to buy a little bit more cheese. Another
it just has to be a little bit bigger.
Scrooge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Buy some more cheese, Mr. Scrooge. What's your problem?
He bought a raw turkey for Bean to carry all right. over town.
Yeah, right. So yeah, you're right. Proportionally, just a little bit more cheese would have done it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. Yeah. Then as Scrooge and this whole entourage turn the corner, they pass a storefront where the sign says Micklewhites. I do not remember if we have talked about Micklewhites before. Anthony, do you remember?
I don't think we have.
Okay.
We may have in Christmas Present, because I think that storefront is visible during It Feels Like Christmas.
Oh, okay.
But either way, yeah, it's maybe. Worth mentioning again.
Well, if we have or we haven't, Micklewhite is a reference to Michael Caine's real name. I believe his first name is Maurice. His name is Maurice Micklewhite.
And I think it's Morris. I think it's like, you know, Maurice is sometimes pronounced Morris.
British pronunciation. Because
it's like British, yeah. I believe it was Maurice Micklewhite.
Micklewhite.
Yeah. Which is like a pretty good name. Like, I kind of don't know why he didn't just stick with it.
It's memorable, yeah.
It is memorable.
Even if he changed it to Michael Micklewhite.
If you told me that Morris Micklewhite played Elfie in Elfie, I'd buy that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It doesn't, I don't know, maybe it seemed too upper crust or something, you know, and he has that Cockney accent.
Oh, so right, yeah, maybe.
It does someone decided kind of... it didn't fit or something, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah, I wonder whose decision it was, if it was him or an agent or somebody else.
Yeah.
I bet it was cool for him to stroll onto the set and see his name, his real name, plastered on the storefront. I assume it was a surprise to him.
No, it's a nice little Easter egg for him to just stumble onto one day. I was going to say, in this like really nice kind of stage image of Scrooge surrounded by all these Muppet characters, what I really love is how vibrant, even, you know, the Muppets are all very colorful, but the thing that stands out most is his scarf that he has. So in this whole, you may have already talked about this already in previous episodes, but, you know, it's such a great moment of Beaker giving him the scarf that to continue to see this moment of appreciation and everything that symbol holds, to see it continue to kind of permeate these scenes. Is really great.
Yeah, that's a good point, because otherwise he's not the most colorful dresser.
Yeah.
But he still has that scarf. Yeah, that's cool. So the song ends, and it's a pretty simple, quiet ending. There's no, like, big crane shot of the whole crowd, like, at the end of It Feels Like Christmas or anything like that. He just sings, "I will hold you close with a thankful heart." And that's pretty much it.
And he looks so happy, though.
Oh, like, he's very happy. Yes, nice. Everyone is so happy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Any thoughts on any lyrics I missed or anything else you wanted to point out from the song?
Do we think there was a reason that they chose J.P. Gross to be in the crowd?
Because he's like vaguely a Scrooge figure, you mean?
Yeah, it's almost like he was around to be like, "I want to be your new apprentice, evil Scrooge." and now he's like, dismayed to find out, like, "Oh no, you're a good guy now." I don't know. I just feel like, you know, whoever was the puppet captain or picking out characters for this moment, like, there had to be some sort of decision making that went into making it him and not, you know, literally any other Muppet character.
Yeah. Well, I assume that there was some kind of decision making about just which puppets to use at all in the movie.
Right.
Because some of them, I'm sure there were some puppets from The Muppet Show who would just not quite have blended in, or other productions that wouldn't really have blended into this world. But you put a top hat on J.P. Gross and he looks like he belongs here.
Yeah, very much so.
But what if you put a top hat on Big Tiny Tall Saddle?
Maybe that's the cowboy DJ from the Johnny Cash episode.
Johnny Cash episode, yeah. Who wears like a fluorescent green, like Evel Knievel cape?
Right. Well, he wouldn't be wearing that guy. In this, but yeah, I think you could put him in the right costume. And he would blend in here.
That's true. But he has like a handlebar mustache. I love that Digit.
Well, I was gonna say, that's like, we've talked about how certain characters, like, Jim Henson Hour characters, Digit and Leon, probably wouldn't really fit in. I don't know, Leon might.
Right.
But yeah, no
for Digit. Sure. But like, versus all these Michael Frith characters from Fraggle Rock, which fit the world perfectly.
Yeah, they just have a certain look to them that seems compatible with the design of Dickensian and London. Yeah, including J.P. Gross. So, so Scrooge heads over to Bob Cratchit's house, and he signals for everyone to get out of the way and be quiet, like it's a surprise birthday party, which is fun.
I love the extremely Muppety sound of everyone running away. Like, there's just this very, like, Fraggle Rock Great Hall sound, like, exactly.
The crowd scattering.
Great. I just love it so much.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. Everyone except Bean, who kind of stands off to the side, and it appears that he's trying to hide behind the turkey.
Yes.
Bean just kind of holds the turkey up and ducks his head behind it, which is very cute. But then Scrooge has to frantically gesture for him to get out of the way after Scrooge knocks on the door.
So when Scrooge is trying to keep the crowd quiet, he makes a zipper motion against his lips.
Oh.
Which I just had to do a quick Googling because I was like, I don't think that that's right. I mean, not to like nitpick a Muppet movie, but it was 1891 that zippers were first invented.
Oh,
so it was 50 years after A Christmas Carol takes place. You know, maybe Scrooge was just ahead of his time, but it was a nice little moment that I realized. I felt very proud of myself when I caught this. But
yeah,
anyways, I'm sorry.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, did people do just like a button your lip gesture back then?
Maybe.
Or now I'm curious, would it be
like the finger in front of your mouth?
Just standard. Yeah, be quiet. But now I'm so curious, would it be possible to trace the origins of the zipper on the lip gesture to mean be quiet? Like, is it even possible to figure out who was like around what time did people first start doing that?
And did it come before or after zip your lip?
Oh, yeah. Did the gesture come first or did the phrase or did they come at the same time? Oh, yeah. I don't know. I want to know all of these things, but
this seems like something that's in a Bill Bryson book or a Susan Orlean book or something somewhere.
You know? Okay.
Like, I feel like someone's covered this at some point.
Listeners, if you have any information.
If they're listening to this right now.
Yes. On the origins of the phrase zip your lip or the accompanying gesture, please let us know. So where were we? We're at Bob Cratchit's store. Kermit, as Bob Cratchit, opens the door, and there's Scrooge. Now he has returned to his former mean demeanor, his stern demeanor. And he tells Bob Cratchit, "You, sir, were not at work this morning, as we discussed." Kermit is very intimidated to see his boss on his doorstep on Christmas morning. But he does assert himself a little bit. He says, "But we did discuss it. It's Christmas Day. You gave me the day off." And then Scrooge makes a very good point, which is, I, Ebenezer Scrooge, would I do a thing like that? Which almost sounds like Scrooge is aware of his reputation as a literary character, like a literary figure. Like, oh, everybody knows. Everyone who's ever read this story knows Scrooge.
Well, to be fair, this song starts with the entire city singing a song about him being a jerk.
Yeah, at the beginning of the movie, everyone in town. Yes, that's true, too. Yes.
You know, like in universe, when he walks past, people sing like, he paints you with indifference like a lady paints with rouge, you know, like.
Right. Everyone who occupies the same town that he occupies knows his reputation.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's got some like real Brett Goldstein energy happening in this, which is really fun.
Sure, sure.
He does, it's true.
Anthony, I wanted to ask you from a curiosity shop standpoint, because it is kind of curious to me like how self-aware the impression that Scrooge does is. And I'm wondering, is there ever a version in which Scrooge goes to Christmas past, but a contemporary Christmas past to see like himself from just a year or two ago?
Not that I can think of off the top of my head. I mean, that's certainly interesting. You know, there's always the Christmas past beats are always the same ones, you know, childhood.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Romance gone wrong. You know what I mean? Working
for
Fezwig, like, it seems like something. I mean, like when they did it on A Different World, Whitley saw herself last Christmas.
Okay.
If that's what you mean.
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah, you should go check. It was on HBO Max last I saw. You never know, you know, with that service these days. But
yeah, no, yeah. I just thought it was, like I said, it was kind of wonderfully self-aware. You know, it's like, okay, this is the last time I get to be a jerk. Let me kind of revel in this.
Yeah, I think you just used the word impression a minute ago. It's like new Scrooge doing his impression of old Scrooge.
Yes.
Right. He's getting back into character is what I put.
Yeah, that's funny. But Bob Cratchit fails to convince Scrooge that he gave him the day off. And Scrooge says, "Bob Cratchit, I have had my fill of this."
Well, before that, just the way that Kermit kind of stammers with, but we did discuss it. It makes a lot of sense for Bob Cratchit.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to imagine Jim Henson's Kermit when confronted by anyone being that tongue-tied, you know?
Right. Yes, I think.
Like, right. I feel like Jim Henson or Kermit would have just been like, "I don't have time for this. He told me I had the day off. Shut the door." You know?
Yeah, or in a production from the classic era, like he would have looked at the camera and done some kind of take or...
Sheesh.
Right. But I do think that this, like I said, it makes sense for Bob Cratchit, but I feel like it informed the way Steve Whitmire played Kermit for the next 25 years.
Yeah. Something that I've noticed in watching this movie 2 minutes at a time is just how much like nice guy, you know, sweet Bob Cratchit Kermit being such an early version of the character performed by Steve Whitmire influence the rest of his time as the character.
Right. Well, like, and I'm thinking specifically of in Muppets Most Wanted, when Piggy asks Constantine and Kermit, like, "Will you marry me?" And Constantine is just like, "Yes, of course." And Kermit does this thing. Kermit does like, "Well, yeah. I would." Well, you know, and that's how she knows it's him.
Well, that,
you
know, that feels true to original Kermit to me, because that's Kermit not knowing how he feels about Piggy, which seems like late Muppet Show,
right,
Kermit.
Right, but on the Muppet Show, I mean, when I think of Kermit and the Muppet Show and Piggy, he's much more dismissive of her in general.
Well, like, I guess I'm just thinking, like, by the time the Muppet movie came out, which very deliberately made them a romantic couple and showed Kermit being romantically interested in her.
Right, but in that movie, he's super suave. In the Muppet movie, he's, "The moon doesn't look like you."
Yeah.
You know, he's not, he's not like, "Oh, bleh, Piggy, oh, bleh, bleh, I don't know."
Right. Yeah, I don't know. I just really liked that joke in Muppets, like, Most Wanted, though.
Me too. But what I'm saying is it feels like Kermit because we've had 20 plus years of Steve Whitmire's Kermit by that time.
Yeah, that's interesting.
If like in Muppets Take Manhattan, they just get married at the end.
Right. Know? Well, okay, yeah. Like, so if you had written that scene in Muppets Most Wanted, what would Kermit's reaction have been? Would it have just been like, I guess?
If I had written that scene in Muppets Most Wanted, there would not be a script because I don't write scripts. I don't know, man.
Okay. just a hypothetical.
But to Anthony's point, it probably like would it. Have been
like
a...
I just think it's very Steve era, that's all.
Right, sure.
Yeah. But I mean, to Anthony's point, that scene in Most Wanted probably would have been just not so quick to say yes. It would have been maybe more instantly dismissive or like, "Oh, Piggy, like, get out of here. What are you talking about?" Why would you plant this in the tabloids kind of thing? As opposed Mr. Scrooge, sir, we discussed.
Constantine says yes, and Kermit says, like, "Why do you want to talk about this now?"
Right.
Exactly. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. That's exactly it.
Okay. All right.
This isn't the time in a church when you're in a dress and I'm in a tux. And
right. Huh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's interesting. But this, when he says, "Bob Cratchit, I've had my fill of this," this is when Miss Piggy, as Emily Cratchit, who has been listening behind the door, jumps out and says, "And I have had my fill of you, Mr. Scrooge." And that is where this clip ends. We don't know what she was going to say. Mr. Screwdriver, Mr. Scrutiny, Mr. Scroobabini. We just don't know.
Yeah, that's what it was, I think. Mr. Scroobabini.
Scroobabini. No, that was one of our nicknames for our dearly departed dog, Munchie, by the way.
Aww.
Moopaltini Scroobabini. So I just had to get that in there.
Sure. That's adorable. No, when I was watching this clip, I truly laughed out loud that the yes. clip cut off with, "And I have had my fill of you, Mr. Scrooge."
Mr. Scrooge.
Just sounds like she's calling him Mr. Scrooge. Yeah. Like,
yeah.
Which that, works.
Right. It use does, that as an insult in the near future.
It's almost a shame that Scrooge had gotten redeemed, because I think in like one karate chop, Piggy could have done what Five Ghosts took a whole night to do.
Yeah, she could have just changed his mind. Yeah, he would have, like Kermit being cured of amnesia, he would have gone flying across the room. And
yeah, he would have hit the Micklewhite sign and just woken up and like, oh man, let's sing Manhattan Melodies now.
Yeah, right. Wait a minute. Christmas is good, and I want to put on a Broadway show.
Yeah, amazing. It's got a great opening number, and it goes like this. When a cold wind blows, it chills you to the bone.
Yeah, I was going to say a tuba goes, bah, 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 bah. But yours is better.
I love it.
Yeah, that's all I have actually for these 2 minutes. Anything else from you two, starting with Cam?
No, I don't think so. I think I covered all of my notes that I had taken down.
All right, Anthony?
So two things. One, I really love the shot right at the end of this where we see Piggy leaning against the door, listening in to Kermit and Ebenezer Scrooge.
Yeah.
Just this, like, she's a slightly out of focus,
mm-hmm.
but it's just this great shot where it's like, hey, everyone, Piggy's coming back. You thought Piggy wasn't right. in this again. She is. Here she is. You
know? Yeah.
And it's angry Piggy. Like, it's the best version of Piggy.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah.
She's foreshadowed before she jumps into the frame.
Right. It's great. It's like, get ready. And then I guess I can save most of this for next week. The other thing was an old Curiosity Shop thing, which is that, as I think I've mentioned several times this season, Scrooge does not go to their house in the book. It does not.
Fascinating.
He spends Christmas with his family. And then he sees Bob Cratchit at work the next day. And I guess we'll talk about that next time.
But the only thing I wanted to buy the turkey and have it sent over to their house.
Yes. Yeah. That happens. He has it sent over to their house. But the one thing that I did want to say now is, in the book it says, but he was early at the office next morning. Oh, he was early there. If he could only be there first and catch Bob Cratchit coming late, that was the thing he had his heart set upon. And he did it. Yes, he did. The clock struck 9. No Bob. A quarter past. No Bob. He was full 18 minutes and a half behind his time. Scrooge sat with his door wide open that he might see him come into the tank. It's just this thing where he's like so excited that like he knows Bob Cratchit had fun at Christmas. He knows Bob will expect him to be mad about it.
Right.
And he's just so excited to be there and like.
And he almost knows that like, I could have been mad about this. Like in an old life, I could have reveled in this for a completely different reason.
Right.
Oh, that's amazing.
And like, obviously next time we'll talk about what happens when Bob gets there, because that's most of the actual conversation, but that's all I have for today.
Okay.
And you know what, Ryan, I'm really sorry. I forgot that I did have just one little note that I really appreciated.
Sure.
There's one moment in the Thankful Heart song before he hands out some presents to the mouse family, that they're walking down a corridor and you see the perspective of someone from inside of a building or kind of looking out through the glass. And it's like a first person perspective kind of moment, which I had never appreciated that little bit, because it kind of goes back to, you know, the Muppet Show and the Muppet movies where they kind of invite you to be a Muppet and see things from the character's perspective. And it's like, for that, you know, those 2 seconds of screen time, you are one of the characters seeing Scrooge kind of pass by, and it's like, wow, look at this, look at what he's doing while you're inside and enjoying Christmas morning or whatever.
Oh,
yeah, I just thought it was a really interesting shot.
Yeah. Yeah. Nice. Thanks for pointing that out. All right. And then, Cam, as you may know, we like to ask all of our guests three questions, starting with, what is your history with this movie, including whether you remember the first time you saw it?
So you're not going to ask about my thoughts on Muppet Beach Party?
Look, if you,
because I had like 40 minutes of notes planned for talking about Muppet Beach Party.
If you want to stealthily work that into your answer.
I'm like dancing because we're talking about Buzz the Wharf Rat.
I was born at the end of 1990. So I don't remember the first time seeing this. Certainly didn't see it in theaters. I was too young. I do remember picking up the VHS tape. Like, that's a core, possibly like one of my earliest memories, like of being at a Sears and picking it up. And I don't quite remember like in what order I would have seen those early Muppet movies, because we had the Muppet movie on VHS tape. We had a lot of like Fraggle Rock, Muppet Family Christmas. So I feel like at the same time that I would have watched this movie or not had this movie yet in my possession, I still got the like Reader's Digest version from the trailer that was in every one of those VHS tapes.
Oh, sure.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know like at what point that was part of my growing up, but just in general, I remember like my relationship with this movie. I think because it's you know, a Christmas movie, there's more reasons to maybe revisit it more than some of the other Muppet movies, just because it's kind of perennial. I remember when I was in seventh grade, we went on a class trip to go see a staged performance of Christmas Carol. And that was the first time that I realized that Muppet Christmas Carol was like actually really true to the source material. Like, I kind of think I just assumed that like it was more of a like monster piece theater, like the King like and I spoof. Kind of like spoof. Then all of a sudden, like, we actually like had a quiz when we got back from the theater of like, what do you remember from this play? Cause they wanted to make sure that people were remembering it. And I was able to just answer all those questions because I knew this movie so well.
Yeah.
Like that was really cool. Just in terms of like, there's a local theater that plays retro movies from time to time. So like, this is one that I've probably seen the most after the two most recent Disney Muppet movies, just because I'm able to go see it with friends, you know, every year. It's also just fun. Like, I grew up, my sister is also a huge Muppet fan. So I remember, you know, growing up with her, and like, she wouldn't like watching it for a couple years because like the last ghost was too scary.
Oh, yeah.
And like, we still both remember being like that feeling of betrayal when Gonzo and Rizzo like peace out in the third act, because they're like, this is too scary. Like, okay, well, if it's too scary for them, we're also going to not watch it, like that kind of thing. Right. And then just the last thing I'll say about this movie and my relationship to it. In my spare time, I like doing storyboard animations and making animatics. And one that I've been like tinkering with for a while is I love the song from Hamilton, Quiet Uptown, and specifically Kelly Clarkson's version of it. And whenever I hear that from the mixtape, yes. And so whenever I hear that, I can picture in my head the Ghost of Christmas Yet to Come sequence, and like visiting the Cratchits as their you know, Tiny Tim has just passed. And the forgiveness and the redemption in my own weird headcanon, and this is sort of like the version of the show that they did at the Strand Theater, because at the end of that, it shows like, as what I've mapped out is that Scrooge, that the final ghost actually like pulls their hood off after he's redeemed, and you see that it's Belle. And so it's like this nice little, and I remember pitching that to my sister, who, you know, we grew up on the Muppets, and we danced to Beach Party in our living room with beach towels on the ground. And when I told her about this, she was like, this is great, but I could only see it as like the Muppets doing a Christmas Carol, doing a Hamilton Christmas Carol. Huh. And so I like have gone back and redrawn this thing as like the Muppets doing the Hamilton, doing the Christmas Carol. So
that sounds like the saddest thing ever made. I will never stop crying when you release it.
Well, that's honestly, like, I hate to say it, that's kind of my brand when it comes to my right. like story animation stuff, because it's just, and so, a lot of my puppetry too just has that like heartwarming, but like, oh, it's also gonna kind of mess you up from the feels. But yeah, hopefully by the time it's always something that I need to like really commit to drawing it in digitally in like, you know, September or so that by Christmas time when people will actually watch it, it'll be relevant. But one day. You heard it here first.
Yeah. Great. Cool. We'll keep an eye out for that. I think somewhere in that answer you mentioned having the Muppet movie on VHS. So I have to ask, when you got the Muppet movie on VHS, did you get a free watch?
So here's the thing.
Did you say get a free watch?
Yes, I said get a free watch.
I could have got a free watch.
But you did not. Okay.
I don't think I did. I don't. So like I may have, and it could have been at a point where like I wasn't telling time yet. So maybe one of my cousins got it. I'm not sure. I've asked my parents.
Sure, you would have been pretty little. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've asked my parents if they remember it, and it's just too long ago that they don't remember if we had it or not. But I did. We didn't have the caper. So I don't know. Were those in a bundle together?
No, they were released separately.
Okay. Came with the free watch. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I do not then, have a free watch. So
this is going to be real nerdy.
Yeah. Go for
but
it.
But there was another release in non clamshell, just regular cardboard cases.
Okay.
Of all three Jim era movies in like 1998.
Really?
Yes. From Sony.
Okay.
I don't know why or how that happened.
I didn't know about that one.
Yeah. But I remember seeing those in Suncoast.
Huh.
And they didn't, none of them had free watches. But so you could have had those, you know, you would have been 8 years old or whatever.
No, these I definitely, it was the clamshell.
It was earlier.
Okay. Yeah, okay. Yeah. I've had the Muppet movie on VHS for before I can remember. Sure. So it was the free watch era. I just don't know if alas, if it came with free watch or
too
not.
Too bad. Well, the next question though is how do you rank
so good?
How do you rank this one alongside the other Muppet movies?
So it's like middle of the list for me, I would say. So Muppet movies is in my number one place for sure. Follow That Bird is number two, because I consider that a Muppet movie.
Okay.
Because it has Kermit in it and it has Muppets in it, it's a movie.
A bird brain,
Birdketeer Lifer. And then after that is Manhattan. I hadn't, because I didn't have it on VHS tape or it wasn't accessible at the library. That was one that I didn't see until I was like 12 or 13 and like really getting into Muppets and puppetry.
Okay.
So like I was at a place where I could appreciate it more. So I think that gets it up there. And then, so then Christmas Carol and Great Muppet Caper kind of fall into that fourth, fifth tier. Mm-hmm. Because I see the value and the merit and everything that is wonderful about Great Muppet Caper, but I also like viscerally still remember being like 4 years old and not understanding what was compelling or interesting or funny about the John Cleese scene or the Columbo scene.
Yep.
So that like I still have to like fight that a little bit. when I watch it now. But I mean these are all fantastic. And then from there, then it goes down into like Muppets from Space, Muppet Most Wanted, and then Treasure Island and Grouch Land at the bottom of that list. Okay. So.
Yeah, that's interesting to include the Sesame Street movies in that ranking. I don't know if anyone else has actually done that. Maybe they have, and I just don't remember. But
yeah, to me, like, it, and that's where, you know, growing up on all of the Muppet show, you know, Muppet content, Sesame Street VHS tapes, like it was all in the same, it was all on the same shelf, right?
Sure.
And you watch Muppet Family Christmas, and it's like, okay, that's all in the same world. So to me, it was just like, anyhow.
Sure. Then
no, I get it.
Yeah. And then the last question, do you watch this movie every year at the holidays?
I do. My sister and I still every year, it's part of we do a 30 Rock style Christmas attack zone. You know, when we're getting the tree set up and wrapping gifts, there's kind of a long list of movies and specials that we try to get through. And this is solidly in that rotation.
Cool. Yeah, that seems to be a tradition among many casual and hardcore Muppet fans. So,
for sure. And I'm so glad that you know, you could finally watch it on Disney Plus in high def with the scene restored, because that was
the song. Yep.
That was definitely missed.
Yes. All right, so then with that, we can wrap things up for this week. Listeners, make sure you check out toughpigs.com on the internet and everywhere. Our thanks to Morgan Davey for our logo. I am on Letterboxd at Movies Are Neat and on Twitter at Me Ryan Rowe. Anthony is on Letterboxd at Zeppo Marxist. Cam, where can people find you or your work on the internet?
I am at Cam Garrity on most social media things. I'm not on Letterboxd yet, and I want to. I just need to like carve out that time in my digital life to be able to commit to it. But it sounds like a really cool platform. CamGarrity.com. You could see a lot of my work of puppetry and art and podcasts and things. And then the main podcast, Puppeteers podcast, TEARS. Is coming back at some point this year, later this spring or early summer. Adam Krutinger and I are looking to get to 100 episodes of in-depth interviews with the world's most passionate puppeteers. So keep an eye out for that.
Yeah.
Right. And since Ryan's probably too humble, I'll plug that Ryan was on your podcast.
That's
yes,
true.
He was. Yes. Him and Joe were talking about Tough Pig's 20th anniversary.
Yeah, and you've talked to everyone. That's if anyone who's listening to this podcast has never heard Puppeteers, then you should definitely go listen to it, because you will like it.
I appreciate that.
It's the only interview with Joe Matthew I've ever heard. I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
Oh, so you know what? Joe Matthew was on a different podcast that I did, but I'm glad you heard that one as well. So I had another podcast, short-lived series. Which I also hope will come back, called This Should Have Been a Phone Call.
Right.
Oh, right. Yeah.
Which was with different friends and artists who I admire. But yeah, Joe Matthew, boy, oh boy. Talk about like Sesame Street and Muppets looming large in an imagination. It was a dream to talk to him, because, to say nothing of the merch and the books, but also like Sesame Street Live was such a big thing for me growing up. And to have the programs that he illustrated.
And programs and everything. Yeah.
Yeah. So the fact that we were able to talk for an hour and just chat it up, I'm so proud of that one. And Anthony, I'm glad that you heard that. But at Puppeteers, we've had all sorts of people. We talked to Matt Vogel. We had Steve on, Eric Jacobson, Dave Goals, plus a lot of puppeteers who you may not have heard of, but who you've definitely seen and enjoyed their work. So
yeah, right. Which is it's great to have them have a venue where they can talk about all that stuff.
Totally.
So that's for great. Sure. Yeah. And listeners, in addition to seeking that stuff out, we like when people give us positive reviews for our podcast online. So we would appreciate that. And also, tell everyone you know to listen to the show, including your elderly former boss and elderly former headmaster. And join us again next week for another episode of Moving Right Along. Goodbye.
I've had just about my fill of you, Mr. Scrooge.